InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Is there a hidden epidemic of workplace loneliness? Recent research shed some light on this, and here to share the findings is Baron Erdogan, professor of management and leadership in the School of Business at Portland State University. Professor, your review looked at 233 empirical studies. What prompted you and your colleagues to take such a big look at workplace loneliness?
My research group has been investigating interpersonal relationships in the workplace for a long time, focusing on managers and coworkers. But of course, you can't study connection without looking at this flip side, loneliness. And during the pandemic, loneliness shifted into the global conversation. So we started seeing these statistics that were really staggering, like 1 in 4 adults reporting that they feel lonely. So we thought that it reached the level of a public health epidemic. And because the workplace is where we spend the majority of our waking hours, we thought that we had to understand the role it plays. So we conducted this massive deep dive into the literature, reviewing the research spanning decades of data. So we felt that it was timely and overdue. We wanted to look at the connection between work and how it contributes to the sense of loneliness and what to do about it.
You make a clear distinction between social isolation and loneliness. Why is that difference so important for employers to understand?
Yes, because being lonely and being alone are not really the same thing. So loneliness, one of the misunderstandings about loneliness is that it is this perceptual feeling that we get, that there is a mismatch between the amount of connections we have and the ones that we want. And loneliness can happen when we're perfectly surrounded by a group of people. So loneliness is the feeling that the connections that we have to others isn't meeting our needs. So it has less to do with how many people we're surrounded with versus how we feel about those connections.
There's a comparison of loneliness to hunger, a biological signal. Can you explain that analogy?
Sure. Short-term loneliness serves a biological purpose because loneliness is an alarm system. So just like hunger tells you to go find food, loneliness tells you to go find connections or find your tribe. So in the short term, that sting is actually very functional. It's a nudge for us to connect to other people. But the problem becomes when loneliness is chronic. At that point, it becomes really difficult to get out of because your brain starts scanning the environment and looking at the social environment as a minefield. So you start interpreting neutral comments as insults or invitations to social events as traps. So then you start withdrawing into yourself, which becomes a self-reinforcing situation where lonely people start feeling lonely in the future. So that's the cycle of loneliness, and it can be difficult to get out of.
I think you touched on this, but what are some other emotional and cognitive consequences when loneliness becomes chronic?
It has a lot of consequences for the person as well as organizations. So there's a physical cost. Loneliness at work doesn't stay at the office. It follows people home in the form of insomnia, increased alcohol use, and puts people at greatest risk of depression. So it is very harmful for the person in question. And it is bad for organizations too. It leads to an energy drain. People who feel lonely are emotionally exhausted. They don't have the bandwidth to be creative or solve complex problems. It affects their job performance. And it also harms the team because we see a direct connection to lower levels of what we call pro-social behavior. So lonely people are less likely to help a struggling colleague or share their best ideas. They are more likely to withdraw into themselves just to cope with the isolation.
Our guest is Baron Erdogan, PhD, professor of management and leadership in the School of Business at Portland State University, talking about research into workplace loneliness. Professor, you found that not all jobs protect against loneliness. What kind of workplace conditions increase the risk?
What we find is one of the biggest factors that protect against loneliness is autonomy. So when managers trust employees to decide how to work or when to work, it sends the signal that this person is a valued adult. So trust is a massive shield against loneliness. So jobs that give people autonomy protect against loneliness versus jobs where people are micromanaged and do very repetitive tasks, they make people feel like an object as opposed to a person. So there is a connection there. Leadership, managerial style also makes a difference. So when managers have high quality relationships, trust-based relationships with their employees, and when they display compassionate leadership, it protects against loneliness.
So it's possible to reduce loneliness by improving the design of jobs? And if so, what would that look like?
That would involve giving people a high level of autonomy and respecting them as people. So giving people decision-making ability in the job, making sure that jobs are meaningful and people can bring their whole selves to work. These are some of the important conditions that contribute to lower levels of autonomy. So we're seeing big effects for inclusion, a fair organizational culture, a compassionate culture where managers are paying attention to when employees are hitting a wall and giving them grace when things are going wrong and recognizing them when things are going right. A lot of it depends on leadership as well as job design.
For someone listening right now who feels lonely in their job, what is one practical first step they can take?
Oh, they can take action. Particularly these days when people are working increasingly remotely, connections we're finding need to be really intentional. So people need to be proactive in establishing relationships. So whether they're working in person or remotely, they need to make time for connections. So that might mean building those connection meetings into your schedule. So that might mean the first 5 minutes of every meeting is just conversation about personal life. It might mean taking a coffee break that you haven't spoken with in a long time and just opening up and being vulnerable a little, just talking about what worries you or what makes you happy in addition to the workplace conditions.
Some management people may feel it's risky to get too close on a personal basis with their employees. You know, it might be politically incorrect or one of those situations. What would you say to that?
I would say that is misguided. I would say having good quality relationships with your employees doesn't mean becoming friends with them necessarily. It means you pay attention to their behaviors and problems, providing support when they need it. And instead of treating people like a cog in a machine or only people who bring performance and watching performance, paying attention to them at a personal level. How are they managing their work-life balance? What are they worried about? What are their career goals? And it involves also being trustworthy, keeping your promises to employees and being ethical and empathetic with them. So all of these will contribute to a high-quality relationship, but it doesn't really cross the boundary of personal and professional relationships.
What would you say to people listening who are not employed, but they feel lonely? What basic advice would you have for those people?
What we are finding is one thing that is easy and actionable and that helps with loneliness is volunteering. So that is one of the powerful interventions our research has uncovered because it shifts focus to others. Instead of worrying about loneliness and ruminating about it, it puts you in touch with other people, but it also makes you more other-oriented. And it provides interaction opportunities where connections can happen as well. So volunteering is one of the interventions that I would definitely suggest.
Do you find that loneliness occurs in the academic setting as well?
I'm sure it does, yes. We are fortunate to be surrounded by people, but we have also high levels of meaning in our jobs and high levels of autonomy. But I would assume that myself, as well as my coworkers, we feel lonely once in a while, particularly when work pressures get too much, or if we're working remotely all the time, sometimes that can happen. But I'm hoping that we're taking this as a signal to connect to each other rather than withdraw from social situations.
On an individual level, you mentioned mindfulness practices. How might mindfulness help someone who feels lonely at work?
It does help quite a bit because of the cycle of loneliness. As I mentioned, loneliness can put us into this negative self-talk cycle, meaning lonely people start interpreting negative situations in the most negative light. They may start worrying about the social consequences of sharing too much or too little. So lonely people ruminate quite a bit about what they have done and haven't done. Mindfulness can be helpful because it brings your brain to the current moment. So instead of worrying about the future or worrying about what you have said or done wrong in the past, it forces you to experience the present. So it is very helpful to deal with this self-reinforcing cycle of loneliness. That is one of the biggest threats of loneliness.
If someone is interested in learning more about this, is there a reference that you can suggest, a website or something?
Definitely. Our research has been published in Journal of Management, and it is freely available.
Perfect. Berin Erdogan, PhD, Professor of Management and Leadership in the School of Business at Portland State University. Professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Next, creating pro-girl environments. That story as InfoTrack continues.
Don't go away. InfoTrack will be back right after this.